I'm Johnny Smith.
I'm Richard Porter.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast where two friends talk about cars and the Sultan of Brunei's keys. Do you know I'm still
South
laughing?
South America!
UK!
Tokyo!
It's just still... Wasn't there a JLS track? Wasn't there a JLS track quite recently where... When I say quite recently, actually, probably 5 years ago, where they said something like, America to London to Germany to Ibiza. And you're like, whoa, hang on.
That does ring a bell, but was that JLS?
I don't know, Richard. I'm now wondering whether it wasn't.
But also, I can't stop now. You've made me think of from New York to LA, from LA to
New York. That song.
Well, they have to really manipulate the emphasis to make it all work.
They do.
From
there's
New
another
York to
like
LA,
80s LA, song. Let's take it. First, we take over Manhattan, then we take over Berlin. That was
the Muppets, isn't it?
The Muppets.
The Muppets take over. The Muppet Show. All the old Muppet shows are on Disney Plus.
I discovered
with delight the other day. Yeah.
Bloody hell, that's Christmas sorted.
Well, yeah. So I stuck one on. I was with my daughter, and I stuck one on. She was less keen about it. I loved it. It was the very first episode.
Oh,
you forget
the pilot.
I mean, TV has changed so much. I guess it probably was the pilot, but. I can't remember. The guest was some dancer who I'd not really heard of, although I'd looked her up and she was quite famous at that point. But then it's like a primetime kid skewing show, and there's a whole sequence where she just does a dance, and it goes on for about 5 minutes, and you just think,
what?
They would never do this these days. It wouldn't happen.
I very much think that the Muppet Show is one of those things that you. In fact, the logo for. The Late Break Show.
Oh, it's a bit like the Muppet Show logo.
That was my inspiration.
Was it?
I was looking at... I wanted to get, the play on the kind of chat show element of a certain era.
Yeah.
And I just kept saying to Chops, going, I just want to find something that's... It's not overly... I found the Muppet Show one, and she said, that's good, but it's a bit overly theatrical and scrolly. So it needs to be a little bit... paired back from that, but no, the seed of inspiration came from the Muppet Show.
Wow.
So, which was just an amazing excuse to just watch loads of drum battles on YouTube with Animal, which is still really good.
Have we ever mentioned that the Smith & Sniff logo was inspired by the graphics of the Avenger Tiger?
I don't know if we ever have.
We
have now. So it was always, and what was that War Dance Yellow? Sundance.
Yeah.
Sundance yellow was the yellow colour. War Dance was the red colour.
The only
two colours Avenger Tigers were available. But Sundance is still my favourite. And Sundance yellow tiger glistening
sweet,
in the morning light. It's still a car on my bucket list. And when people do ask you what your dream cars are, and you give them an answer such as "I'd like a really mint Avenger Tiger," they just look at you like, "What? Not a Koenigsegg."
Yeah, you were going to say Bugatti Chiron. We thought that was probably going to
Bugatti
come up,
Chiffon.
Bugatti Chiffon.
Yeah,
very, very. You can see through it. I wanted
Bugatti
to just
Blues
bring
on?
Up. Very, very, just
billowy.
Cinched in at the waist. Yeah, very billowy.
I know you like a blouson, don't you?
Blouson style jacket is, to my mind, one of the worst things that humanity has ever created.
It's long been the preserve of TV car TV presenters, though, from the 80s and 90s. And of course, I'd love to know if Clarkson's got any of his still. If he just tucked away one of his cheeky, because he used to go for the leather jacket as well, the elasticated leather jacket.
He did, yeah. And he also, I think, at one point had a sort of biker-style jacket, though he is not a biker. But he had one of those kind of, when those were fashionable. Or were they? They probably weren't, but he had one anyway. I bet he hasn't, though. Jeremy's not a very sentimental person in that way. I don't think he sort
no.
of...
No.
hangs on to stuff in that way. You know, he doesn't like have any of his old cars or anything. He tends to just move them on.
I remember I was actually quite disappointed when I heard an interview with him where he said stuff like that, because people expect guys like him to have collections of cars, and he was like, no, I've got like two.
Yeah.
And he just says, no, I don't really keep anything for a long amount of time. So he's quite matter of fact about it, isn't he? Has he still got his grocer? His Mercedes grocer?
Yes. As far as I know.
I mean, it's not very useful on a farm, admittedly. Probably it's tucked away somewhere,
but he's not. I saw him the other day, and he's got a Suzuki Jimny. I told you that, didn't I? He's bought a Jimny commercial.
Yeah.
Well, basically, because he decided it's what he needs for the farm, just a little runaround. And
with good residuals.
And so, yeah. And so he managed to get hold of one. And he said, have you driven the commercial one? I said, no, but it's the same as the other one, isn't it? He went, not quite. Do you know how they've made the load bay as big as possible? It's by stopping the driver's seat going back too far. And I was like, oh, okay. I didn't realise that. And then I was able, at the live show last weekend, I was able to... discover this for myself, because we had that Jimny
commercial
there.
Yeah.
And I drove Chops's Jimny as well when we were moving it around the hall. And he's right, the seats do not go back in the van. I don't know how he fits. I mean, he's a tiny bit taller than me and he's not slender. And it's cramped in there. And then I got in Chops's Jimny because I thought, was it always like this?
No.
I got in Chops's one and no, that goes back plenty much. I can fit in the normal Jimny okay, but that commercial felt a bit squeezed.
That could be a bit of a deal breaker, because our Jimny, the seat goes back further than I need it to. If I put it all the way back, I probably wouldn't be able to drive it very well. You know, like your arms are a bit too far away from the steering wheel and you suddenly feel out of control of... the vehicle.
Makes you feel more out of control than the seat being too far back.
It's those people, and we have touched on it before with cars that get delivered to you, and the configuration of chair and steering wheel and everything is just like,
this is
so
not human.
I had the other day a Transit Van Hybrid delivered that we used as our merch van, and it was I like it actually, it's really good. Just feels weird having a sort of petrol engined Transit, but the steering wheel was buried in the dash and the seat was all the way back, so you're like, hang on, this is the worst of all of the worlds. You've got the steering wheel the steering wheel is basically in the engine bay and the seat is back in the is right in the back where all the freight is. You're like, what's going on?
I got into one of those press cars we had in Manchester, and it had been delivered by one of those oddly shaped delivery people, because the seat was set incredibly high so I could barely get in. But then the wheel was, again, buried in the dash, but also tilted maximum bus driver sort of stance. Like, what have you been doing in here? What? How long are your arms?
I think
very strange.
They must have just pulled in, because they arrived at their destination early. So they pulled over a lay-by or a road nearby, and they wanted to get the steering wheel away and push the seat back, because they're going to have a little break, make a few phone calls, eat a few polo mints.
Yeah,
or whatever. I don't know. Get your clipboard out and draw some cocks. I don't know whatever you're going to do, but needless to say, you want a bit more cabin room, and that's how you achieve it. Push the wheel away, rip the seat back as far as you can. Job done.
I've told you before about my old housemate who was a sales rep for Rentokil, and she had a Mondeo company car. Got in it once to move it off the drive of our shared house, and the seat was incredibly reclined. And I went, why have you got the seat like that? She went, oh, you know, just later in the day, I just, you know, really want to relax. I'm a bit tired, so I have it right back. But I just leave it like that. So when I'm in the morning, when I'm all full of coffee and I'm perky, I just sit upright. And she used to drive sitting like as if she's on a bench.
What, like you don't have a seat in the car?
Like you don't have a backrest. She
have you ever just, driven a car without a seat?
No.
Really, really hard and dangerous. You probably knew the last bit.
Well, no seat at all?
Mm-mm.
How do you work the clutch? You're hopping. Every time you change gear, you're hopping.
It's the equivalent.
Hang on, because where's your other foot?
It's the equivalent of doing a chin-up on the steering wheel column.
Well, it's sort of like doing Cossack dancing, isn't it?
Yes, it's
kind
like,
of kicking your legs about.
It's clutch-based Cossack dancing. In fact, drifters have got nothing on it. They talk about it. They clutch kick it all the time. No, no. If you've got no chair in the car,
yeah,
it is properly physical.
Kicking the clutch.
When I say this, I'm saying this. I haven't driven it on the road. This is just like around an industrial estate to check the status of what we've already done to the car. But it's flipping dangerous, and I would not.
Yes.
And my brother's done it even worse. My brother's done that with no brakes whatsoever. So all you have is the handbrake wand, which was just about connected. Yeah,
Jesus,
terrible. Terrible.
I mean, good for upper body strength, I'd imagine, or core strength or wouldn't it be? Because you'd be
sort
of clinging on for dear life. But.
Oh, the that bloke that didn't sing from Boney M, that's what he did. Didn't believe in any...
He bought a car with no driver's seat.
Yeah, and that's how he stayed in shape.
I suggested once, I can't remember which Top Gear challenge, I said there should be a round where two of the presenters are allowed to remove one item from the other's car, and then they have to do a lap of the track, because I thought one of the items you'd remove would be the driver's seat from someone's car, wouldn't you? I think one of them remove one wheel, because that would be quite funny, and then I don't know what the third thing would be, but you're definitely for someone, because all I could picture was James May attempting to get round the track in some shit old car with no seat, sort of clinging to the steering wheel while he Cossack danced on the pedals. I don't know why we didn't do it. I don't think anyone else thought it was a good idea. I thought it could have worked quite well, but there we go.
I thought were we going to read out some readers' letters today?
Were we? I was going to. Do you know what I was going to? I had something I wanted to talk to you about. I had two things actually. One of them was, I haven't told you the story, which was told to me at the Late Break live show in Leicestershire, so weeks, months ago now.
Okay.
Regular listeners might remember we had a story about mucky videos, didn't we, in a car dealer?
Yes, I'm aware. I'm aware of this story.
It was a Vauxhall dealer, wasn't it?
It was Network Q Grot Library, I think
Network
we called
Q,
it.
Network Q, the Grot Library, yeah. Was it Mags or VHSs? I can't remember. Maybe it was both. Well,
I think it was. I think it was motion pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. So, a chap who used to work at Vauxhall headquarters in Luton, he was, I believe, an apprentice in the 70s. Told me that at Vauxhall head office, in the engineering department, whatever, there was a Grotmag system. And as the most junior member of the team at that point, he was told to go to the local newsagent and pick up a stack of this month's freshly printed Grotmags.
Continental pamphlets, yes.
Yeah. But before he left the building, he was given a bag containing last month's Grotmags and told to take it back because the newsagent near Vauxhall HQ operated some kind of trade-in system. So
what?
He would take the old Grotmags back and the bloke would basically knock a load of money off the new ones he was selling him.
No.
And he'd take them back and then they would be sort of passed around the engineering department.
Pre-owned?
Pre-owned. And then what do they call it sometimes? Pre-loved used cars. The pre-loved magazines would then be gathered together at the end of the month or the beginning of the next month, and the junior member of the team would be sent to the newsagent to trade them in for some new ones.
My gosh, it's not... So, I didn't realise there was a Part X of pornographic material.
Well, I would be dubious about buying a second-hand magazine of any kind, but of a grot mag, I'm sorry, but no, I don't... I mean, I don't think antibacterial gel had been invented back then. It's just revolting.
No, I've sat in many a kind of tea-break caravan in the back lot of a body shop or a repair garage, and to be honest, I don't even like drinking out of the teacups in there, let alone holding a graphic
a
novel.
Bongo mag.
Made in the Netherlands.
Did you read that story about Craig Charles that I sent you?
Yes, I did, and it had me sniffling like mad.
Holy hell.
I know.
That, for people who may forget, one of the tabloids did an expose on Craig Charles many years ago, because he was secretly recorded in the back of a taxi, a Skoda Octavia taxi, going from
good detail.
London to Manchester, during which he smoked a large quantity of crack cocaine and also forced the driver to pull over and buy him some grot mags, and then complained as they continued their journey and he continued to smoke crack that he couldn't understand some of the magazines because they weren't in English, and made the driver pull over and get some more that he could understand.
He was
the whole story
muttering
is...
Muttering
and rocking and sweating profusely.
Oh, and
it's,
drinking...
It's a really troubling story.
And he had lager as well. He had lager and also Red Bull. So he had the full suite. He had the full suite there. Yeah. Didn't he?
Uppers and downers and sideways. And, oh, my God. It made me feel a bit sort of clammy and unclean just reading it.
But me too.
It's
he made the driver go in and buy some of the extra.
Yeah, but he got a stack of porn mags and then he couldn't understand. I mean, I don't know what was he.
it's all about
reading
the
letters page.
All about the plot, Richard. As you know, it's all about the plot.
Absolutely. So there we go. Anyway, because I've had this in my notes in my phone of things to mention to you, and I've just had Vauxhall Grotmag system written in my notes for ages, so I can cross that out now. But the other thing I'd written down that I want to talk to you about, it's a question for you.
Yeah.
What is, do you think, currently the most sinister Audi?
Sinister looking, or ones with connotations of drivers?
Well, sort of both. I'll tell you why, because I think the A8. Sinister might be the wrong word, but up to something. You know, the original A8, very good-looking car, but also in black, and particularly if it was an S8, that had a sort of gangster kind of feel to it, didn't it?
There was a little bit of sort of not called the KGB anymore.
Yes, exactly. If you saw one, an original S8 in black going at high speed through Moscow, you'd think, uh-oh. Somebody's about to be picked up.
About 15 years ago, there was a woman around here that I used to sometimes see on the A1, and she had kind of Jackie Kennedy's spec glasses on and her hair done up in a tight knot. And she was always driving on her own, and she drove an Audi A8 in black, older one.
Ooh.
But it was immaculate. And I have to say, it was a massive turn-on. I always thought she looked absolutely smouldering. Because you just don't see it. You don't see, especially a female in a really big executive saloon, because it's usually an SUV now, isn't it? So it's a genre of car that's not seen much, especially with the sole driver. And it's not exactly... Greta Thunberg... what's the word I'm using... going to use
friendly
it's not Greta friendly as such, one person in a massive car, but I mean we do it a lot. But yeah, I haven't seen her for years, and I wanted to know if she traded it in and bought a Renault Capture. But
I hope not.
Well, I hope not. I hope she's still got it. It just sort of like, I know.
Where would you go from there, though? You'd have to, I mean, I hope she just got another large
Volvo thingy. What's the really big saloon with the nice boomerang-style rear lights?
S90.
Yeah, I could see her in an S90. Again,
but it's not
a lesser spotted car.
Nice, but it doesn't have that sort of whiff of naughtiness about it. I thought that the original A8 in black, and even, I think, to a degree, the second-generation one, had a sort of that Jaguar-like quality of just... could be a bit naughty. Something a bit naughty going on, potentially. And then, to my mind now, the A8 just doesn't have that. The current A8 is very much posh airport taxi. That's the look it's going for, not shooters in the boot. And so,
the
to my mind...
The market's not there, though, is it? They probably don't... I'd love it if a car manufacturer design studio admitted that their design time on big saloons has been cut by a third, because they know they're not going to sell as many as they did 20 years ago, so why
bother? Does it work like that? I'm sure we've got some car designers listening.
Yeah, if any designers are listening, it'd be nice to know whether you get your time cut for cars that clearly aren't going to sell as many. I mean, you don't always know what's going to sell what. We know this, but there's an assumption, given that, like, Jag, for example, have actually killed the XJ. the market's not so strong anymore.
I mean, I do remember Ian Callum saying once that they spent a long, long time over the original XF to get it right.
Yeah.
And then with the second generation XF, they were also trying to do the XE, and I suppose the I-Pace was in the mix there and other stuff. And he just went, you know, we had too many cars to finish.
Yeah.
And with broadly the same size team. And so there was less sort of finessing and less kind of, you know, taking everyone's opinion into account. It was just kind of just get these bloody things done.
Get them
and maybe
done.
You can see that a little bit in the design. I mean, I think the current XF isn't half as nice looking as the old one, really. But I guess that's because the original XF had a lot of time and love poured into it. And
yeah.
But I don't know how it works when. I mean, I imagine if you're Volkswagen and you're doing a new Golf, I imagine you take your time over that because you don't want to screw it up. Although I sort of feel like with the current one they have.
I think they have as well.
For that matter, the Range Rover.
Yeah.
It's you just don't want to screw it up. It's the bedrock of the company, and so you don't want to get it wrong. That new Range Rover, by the way, keep seeing pictures of it. Instagram seems to think all I want to see now is pictures of the new Range Rover, but I've got to say, it is. I mean, I thought it was a nice looking car, but it's really growing on me now. It's just, I think it's actually really clever bit of design how minimalist it is. But it'd be nice to see them out on the road, see what it looks like in the world.
I'm looking forward to spending a bit of time in the interior as well. But I probably at the moment more excited about a Rivian, not going to lie.
When's that coming to Britain?
It's supposed to be next year, I think.
Is it?
But it would be, it'd probably be this time next year.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think,
as
we've seen with Tesla, you know, like people laugh at them at first, like other manufacturers don't take them so seriously. Then suddenly they get the market share and all the other manufacturers are like, oh shit, I didn't see that.
And it's interesting, isn't it? With electric cars, it's like all bets are off. You know, there's no, I think if they were coming with a new petrol powered SUV and pickup truck, it wouldn't really get so much notice. But because it's electric, there's less brand snobbery around electric cars, I think. And people, it's just, you know, gadget heads it's crazy for the newest thing.
Exactly. So I am enthusiastic about that. And a full EV Range Rover can't come soon enough on that side of things, Richard.
Ots. So let me tell you where I think the gangster Audi of the moment is now. I think it's actually not current, but the old shape A7 in
black. Do you know that's a car that's
shooters in the boot appeal.
That's a pure grower for me, because when it first came out I really disliked the shape and I found it irritating. I was actually quite irked by it, and now it probably took me 3 years to kind of get my head around it. It was almost a bit of a Bangle 7 series for me,
really.
Yeah, but now I look at the A7 and I go, I can see it now. That little ducktail kind of boot lid shape. It doesn't look...
Yeah.
I thought before it looked like it just had some sort of bad accident around the D-pillar and been pushed down, you know, like hit by a lorry. But no, I think it's a good-looking car. And I remember driving the RS7, which was a weapon. That was the first fully autonomous car I'd ever been in.
What?
Yeah, it's either the S7 or the RS7. Yeah, they did a fully autonomous one, and they mapped out a racetrack, and I had to be driven round by the computer, and we were doing 130 on the back straight. I was absolutely soiling myself. Because they showed me, there was two panic buttons in it, and one of them would hit, as soon as you hit that, it would just do a full emergency stop, you know, in situ, and it had the carbon ceramic brakes, so it would stop. And I guess that's why they use the RS model. But
had to be behind the wheel, presumably. You couldn't just sit in the passenger
seat.
I had
to be behind the wheel, but we were filming for Fifth Gear, and I was hugging myself. So I basically had both my hands wrapped around my body. You know, like the way that sort of downtrodden women walk around the set of EastEnders? Like that.
In a cardigan with a hanky stuffed
in
one sleeve.
Exactly like that, with sort of unwashed hair. So like that. And then there's a normal steering wheel there with a few little sensors and things on it. Then the centre console was just full of extra wires and sensors. But there was this huge, huge red button. I got a photo of it somewhere. And I think it reminded me of a game show button when you want to get the question right. You know, like fastest buzzer wins or whatever. It was this huge panic button. But we were going around this track and it was self-learning. So it had been raining and it was damp. And at first the engineers, I think, were a bit like, oh, yeah, OK, well, it'll be interesting to see how this one goes. And I'm thinking, interesting. fucking interesting.
You don't want to hear from engineers, autonomous car engineers and doctors. You do not want to hear, well, this could be interesting. Well,
yeah, because we were carrying some proper speed, weren't we? Mm. So, I mean, you're over 100 miles an hour and there's damp around and it's a big, heavy car, as you know. So, yeah, it squirreled coming out of a corner a little bit too hot.
Which track was this?
Oh, gosh, I knew you'd ask me this. It's in Spain.
Oh, OK.
I'll find out. It's on fifth gear. I don't know.
Well, from the rain, we can presume it's a track on the plane, but we don't know where.
Yeah, I'll find out.
But it
did a little squirrel coming out of one of the corners hot, and then one of the engineers did say, well, the next lap it won't make the same mistake again, and sure enough it had mapped the grip level that it was experiencing, you know, like hundreds of times a second, as they do, and as it came around the next corner it just came off the throttle a little bit and then went on a little bit less aggressively, and like, bloody hell. And I think we did about 7 laps in this thing. Yeah. And it was terrifying, but it was deeply impressive. And that now was quite a long time ago. I'll find out the year. But it was a while ago. It was a good
one. I presume they are still working on this, but they're just not showing off about it. Because BMW, around the same era, I seem to remember, brought a 3 series maybe of some sort over to the UK, and we had it lapping the Top Gear track. And it was...
Yeah.
quite impressive. But that was, it feels like that was a long time ago now.
It does feel like it was a long time ago. And I think that it's all sitting waiting. And I know some governments will let manufacturers drive around in certain areas. There's parts of Vegas, there's parts of Sweden, isn't there? Trollhättan, I think, is... Gothenburg. There's parts of Gothenburg where Volvo are allowed to autonomously drive. So it's all advancing, but government legislation won't let you sell it in that state yet.
Yeah.
So I suspect when the government do go, okay, we'll let you do it, the cars will just be ready, like ready. You'll be able to buy them that week, which could be terrifying. I don't know yet. I'm still in two minds about full autonomy. I think it's wonderful if I've had a skinful. And I don't know, you and I went to an important creative meeting at Baldock Services and I decided to have loads of white wine spritzers and then go, oh, bollocks, I can't drive home.
Well, but that's the thing. when are we going to get to that point where you will be allowed to not be capable of driving the car? Because I would have thought that there'd still be stipulations about you have to be able to take over if the car shits itself.
Well, quite. Because we've all been in that situation.
Everything's so frigging fiddly in the real world, isn't it? It's you know, just driving out of my street and trying to get, you know, onto a main road. You've got to do lots of tucking in to let cars through and stuff. Which, if everything is autonomous, they'll talk to each other and they'll sort that out. But if they're not, we're in a world of hurt.
There's too many eventualities. That's the thing.
Exactly.
There's too many ways that a dog or a ball could run into the road, or a car could reverse off a drive, or ambulance might be coming instead of a normal car. There's just too many
situations. And very, very far in the future, the ambulance will be telling all the cars around it, I'm coming, and, you know, everything will be talking over 5G and all that stuff. But that's still a way off, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, in the immediate now, you can have an RS7 for 32 grand.
How much?
32.
That was what? That was 80?
I think they were very expensive, weren't they? But there's a lot of par for the money. 560 horsepower, according to this advert.
Yeah, I remember it was a weapon.
But I quite like those A7s because when they came out, because they reminded me in sort of spirit of the original Audi 100 Avant, which wasn't an estate, it was just a hatchback. And I thought, oh, that's what they're doing.
That's right.
They're doing little, it's a bit of a nod back. But I did think, who is going to buy that? It's hard to understand. It's a big car that's basically a big hatchback. Which, you know, the other thing I liked about it is it reminded me of the Rover SD1 somehow.
Which was a big hatchback.
Which is a big hatchback. But you see them around. You see A7s around. This is what reminded me of this, because there's someone around the corner from me who's got a black non-RS, just a normal A7, and I thought, that's a bit gangster in a sort of subtle way. And it's a handsome car. I really like it. I drove onto Le Mans once and back again.
Did you?
And it was, yeah, a diesel one. And oh, but it was really, yeah, just, it was. I remember coming back, you know, it's like Sunday afternoon, get out of the circuit just after the race ended, get on the road, tired, a bit clammy. And the next thing I was walking
into my
front
door. Were you with Craig Charles?
Like, yeah. he was very cross about the French grotte mags that I bought. Couldn't understand them. It just sort of whooshed me home. And it was like, oh, I'm home. That's quite nice. Yeah, Sunday evening, I'm home. And it feels like about an hour ago I was in Le Mans. But it wasn't. It was very, very good cruiser.
You got me trying to think of the most sort of sinister Audis around at the moment. I can't quite. I keep going back to AMG Mercs because there's some very aggressively driven AMG V8s about.
Yes.
But yeah, the Audi sinister.
I think that's the thing. But I mean, the main thing I thought about is just the A8 is no longer sinister. Just, oh look, here's a Swiss businessman being chauffeured to his office. That's what it looks like.
Yes.
And
It doesn't have the majesty. I think there's less majesty in big saloons, and I suspect it's because they're more curvaceous, and I think that a big saloon should not be curvaceous because it needs that presence in the way that we both appreciate the Toyota Century, of which I know you're still sniffing around like a dog around another dog's detail
holder. Yeah, last week
holder.
I had a Century. My Century craving flared up, and I thought there were three for sale in the UK, which, considering there's only about 25 of them in Britain, that's quite amazing. It turns out that one of them, which has been advertised on Car Classic for ages at this place in the northeast, a chap that follows me on Twitter, bless him, who lives nearby the place in Middlesbrough that was selling it.
Yeah.
He said, if you want, I'll swing by tomorrow and see if it's still there, because it's not on their website anymore. It's only on Car Classic. And then reported back that it's gone. So,
in a world where fuel is 150 odd pence a litre, someone out there's gone, I know, I'm going to get a V12 Toyota Century. That's a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
I've heard that Americans are a bit cross about the price of their fuel at the moment, and it is quite amusing to do a little comparison, isn't it?
And go, because what are they? I can't remember what it is. I did see this, someone on the Clayfield, saying how much fuel is in California at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
I think it was the chap, the YouTuber Rich Rebuilds, who's got a Tesla Model S that was crash damaged, and he put a V8, an LS V8 for ironies. And I think he obviously he's driven a lot of electric cars until now, and he's had a sudden realisation that maybe his conversion is badly timed. I probably would have thought about that while I was just measuring the engine bay over my first cup of coffee. But interesting build. I remember seeing a V8 Prius before. That was
really?
That was done for, I think, SEMA or SEMA LOLs at least a decade ago. Yeah, it was V8 Prius with a fairly kind of tubbed back end, looked a bit... It looked good, actually, because it's a very aerodynamic shape, so it probably would have made quite a good race car.
SEMA LOL sounds like somebody who'd be in the streaming charts with a song that's very up and downy. Full Mariah Carey spec.
I think she's supporting BTS on their world tour.
Yeah, she is. She's only 19, but she's already won a Grammy. It's amazing. Good old SEMA LOLs. I just want to say the chap who went and checked out that Century, if it was for stuff for sale, is called Matthew Tyson. So thank you, Matthew, for going up there last week and having a look. So there are two, I haven't checked today, but as far as I'm aware, there are still two Centuries for sale in Britain, both in London. Bizarrely, a V12 Century is ULEZ compliant.
Is it really?
Well, it is because they fall. I think certainly I checked one of the ones because you could see the plate in one of the ones that's for sale in London, and I ran it against the ULEZ checker out of interest, and it's a 2004 car, I think. So, but bizarrely, it's assumed to be ULEZ compliant because it's an import, and I don't know how the rules work.
ULEZ.
So it's a practical London car, apart from the crippling cost of
just.
Well, I wonder how thirsty they are. Actually,
I bet you it
is. I imagine they're very under stress.
I bet it uses a lot less fuel than your Range Rover. Just saying.
Yeah. I had to brim the Range Rover the other day. It was on fumes and I brimmed it.
And it was me, what? It was
expensive.
£460?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, it was 130 quid. It's a bit
sugar. Somebody on Twitter.
I mean, that'll last me a while because I don't drive it that much.
Somebody on Twitter saw a picture of my Dodge parked next to the Zoe long-termer, which I use every day at the moment, and just sort of, and I was said, "Oh, here's, you know, here's the dinosaur next to the daily driver." And he went, "Oh, if I had that charger, I'd be using it every day." And I just went, "I don't think you would. You'd go bankrupt." Mm. And he went, "Oh, I don't know about that, son. I've got a BMW X5 V8 petrol, which is what is that a 4.4?" Or a
4.6. Yeah.
So he said, "Yeah, I get about 12 to 13 and I drive it every single day." And I went, "What? Even if I drive my charger like an absolute see you next Tuesday, I don't get that low. The charger's not that bad."
No. My Range Rover wouldn't. I mean,
no.
It depends. What's he doing?
I don't know what he's doing.
Holding it in second everywhere.
I think he's got
the M5, but I've left it in second.
He's got the kickdown switch. I think he's got the kickdown switch rigged up to the volume of the radio or something. Yeah. It's just constant.
he's put some kind of like a can of soup on top of the kickdown switch so that every time he touches the accelerator, it kicks down.
I know. Or is he? Is he old school police driver trained where he's constantly just holding it in the lower gear on the auto box?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just singing.
In case he needs to do an overtaking move.
Everywhere it's sort of 3,000 just waiting. You know, like a racehorse waiting for the gates to drop.
Brilliant.
Well, anyway, yeah, so I was a bit shocked about that. And I also thought, I mean, it's a free country and all that, but I just simply couldn't drive a car every day that did 12 to the gallon. I just couldn't do it. I'd just rather spend my money on something else other than petrol.
Yeah.
In the world of Craig Charles, just spend it on Class A's and pornographic and material and lager. Although I know we talked about Craig Charles, and I will finish it by saying I've met Craig. He's a really, really nice guy. And I can't believe that people like that can come back from such bad press. And so, and public disgrace, and they and become darlings of the BBC again. It just goes to prove that it can happen. You can be forgiven. Yeah.
The secret is that he is a nice guy, and so off mic, off camera, people just went,
"He's all right,
really decent chap. Let's give him another chance." But
yeah, well, I just want everyone to remember
it's
that
the power of not being a dick.
If I get woken up and I'm naked, lying in a bus stop, I don't know, and I'm surrounded by cans and literature, and I've disgraced myself, my career absolutely shrivels within minutes.
The next thing you've got a show on Six Music.
Oh, I'd love to do a show on Six. No, Six Music's too much of a connoisseur. I could see you and I doing some sort of very late night Heart / Magic type of situation. You know what I mean? Like a cliche driving music. Thinking like, okay, this one's the cars. Who's going to drive you home?
No. Really? The show would have to be called On the Nose. And hello, we're both into cars. Here's Crash by the Primitives, because cars crash.
Oh, but we could do that, Rich. I think we've got it in us. Would you struggle?
I was listening to commercial radio the other day because everything I had Six Music on, and I can't remember why it was annoying me a little bit. And I flicked to Radio 1, and of course, it's just inane.
Yes.
The people talking were doing my head in. And then Radio 2 was, I don't know, something syrupy. And the other thing I've got saved on the presets in the car is Absolute 80s. So I was like, that'll be all right. I put a bit of Absolute 80s on. And that's all well and good. But then the ads came on, and there's, I can't remember, is it Thomas Cook or something? It's one of the travel agents. Uses Jess Glynn's Hold My Hand as their little jingle.
Yes.
And it is. We've ruined that song for me. Because
yes.
We had a chat when we were doing a video about building a mobile recording studio in a van, and then we could invite artists such as Jess Glynn to come and record, but remembering there's only a chemical loo in the van, and then we started talking about Jess Glynn having a poo in our mobile office studio van, and that's all I can think of now when I hear that song, which a few people I met at the live show in Manchester said, "Oh, you've ruined the word sport," or you've ruined the word Ford for me and stuff. And I was like, "Oh, really sorry. We don't mean to." But then I realised I've done it to myself.
We've ruined what, Richard?
Sorry, sports and faults.
Faults. I'm actually filming a really nice fault this weekend.
Are you? What are you filming?
It's going to be a barn find. And I think I feel like it's going to be well worshipped time capsule, so I'm quite excited about it. And I hear that it's for sale, and I've got to be very careful. I've got to tread very carefully, because I might end up with it. And it is deceased spec as well.
So, oh, is it?
Yeah. You'll have to watch it on a future Late Break Show episode. But
what era of faults?
It's actually the same age as me. So if you know the year I was born, it's kind of exactly that, really. So there's me clue, Richard. That's as far as we go on that side. But it's a special edition, and it's worshipped, I have a sneaky feeling that it's going to clean up just right, and it's going to be lovely. So I had to phone up Folds Heritage Department, and they're doing a little bit of production number crunching for me.
Oh.
Which is brilliant. Exciting stuff. I haven't bought a car for so long, and I'm not saying I'm going to buy that one, because I'm not sure, and I probably can't. but needless to say, the temptation is strong in this one. This sort of that conversation is just going to peter out.
Well, because you don't want to incriminate yourself, or it's like talking to a recovering alcoholic.
It is,
isn't it? Just going, I've got to go do some filming in a pub next week, and your hands get shaky.
A free bar as well. Yeah,
a bit wild eyed. Yes.
Oh gosh. Yeah, I'll just have some peanuts.
Vodka luge things.
Oh yeah, gosh. COVID's ruined those, hasn't it? You mustn't lick the same area that all the other people have who are absolutely banjaxed on the dance floor.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't have one of those.
It's probably for the best. I never particularly thought they were a good idea anyway, but
I did one at a school summer party, our kids' school summer party.
What?
I think they had one there. Yeah, it was impressive. But I think the person that was in charge of the luge was just upping the units each time, and by the time I got to them and I got bullied into it, I swear I had 6 shots of vodka in one hit. Because the severity of the alcohol hits you about a minute after you've just drunk it.
Yes.
I was walking to the gents' toilets, and I realised I was walking at quite an acute angle. And I was like, oh, wow, this is really early in the evening. I've got to go steady now.
Well, as in your body was an angle to the floor, or that you were doing that thing where you think you're walking straight and then you realise you're actually, like, your tracking's gone out.
Oh, I was. Yes,
the curb. Oh, no, I'm following the camber of the floor more than I
want to. That's it. The tracking was out. And I think I had one shoulder slightly further down than the other one, so I might have looked like I was walking like someone who, from a musical, who was clicking their fingers and doing a theatrical walk. I wasn't trying to do that intentionally.
Is Johnny all right? He looks like he's accidentally in West Side Story.
Yes,
for a minute,
I did look like a dad doing West Side Story, walking to the gents, which is not what I was doing. Oh, I keep meaning to bring this up. We've had a fantastic email from a chap called Peter Heeman, who talks about a conversation we had a week or two ago about the Sultan Brunei's key rack. Do you know where we were? Because he's just put, Dear Smith, off work at the moment, bit of downtime, so an internet wormhole beckons. The Sultan of Brunei allegedly has 7,000 cars in his collection, if you believe Wikipedia.
Mm.
An average weight of 70 grams per key, a collection of one key per car would weigh 490 kilos, which is more than a Caterham 7-170. He'd need one hell of a kitchen drawer, or he'd need a quality... How big would that Quality Street tin be? It would be, like, what, 4 pallets on the floor? Two pallets and a drum, like an oil drum height.
An oil drum.
But probably, double triple the circumference.
Or just a child's paddling pool.
Oh, I would keep them all in a child's paddling pool. Or, you know, one of those plastic sandpits that's shaped like a clam that you can shut back down. Do you know those ones to stop cats from pissing in the children's sandpit?
Yes.
Yeah, one of the. I think the Sultan of Brunei's just got one of those, but it's possibly made of real pearl and gold. Just to make it extra extravagant. But he's also got a spare one with all the spare keys in, so it's the same again.
Oh, God.
And each one has a little badly written tag on it, like the ones when you sometimes get your car sent to a place and someone's written something on it.
You mean one of those ones that looks like a sort of like the label that was affixed to Paddington? It's a brown.
Yeah, it's a brown, and it's sort of when kids were evacuated out of cities in the World War II.
Yes.
It's one of those tags, and it just says Richard Range Rover. You go, can you be a bit more specific about that? Like the reg number, like the colour?
Yeah.
Just says Richard Range Rover.
They're always tearing off, aren't they? They'll tear off when it's in a sort of a rat's nest of other keys.
Oh, yeah.
So you'll never go, oh, bloody hell, well, it's a Bugatti key, but which Bugatti?
Well, exactly.
The Sultan's just having a nightmare.
The Sultan.
His kid's sandpit of keys.
And he drags it around. It's on cast. Someone's put it on Biffa Skip caster wheels. And he pulls it around with a gold dog chain. He's like, I've got all the keys in it. I just can't be asked to find them all. But they're all
also,
here.
If there's any sort of, you know, a bit of floor in the Sultan's garage that's not level and that,
gets
a bit of a roll on, the momentum.
Oh, it
would roll, go out of control, and if there's someone like one of his staff standing with their back to it, it'd just take your ankles away from under you, wouldn't it? And you'd fall backwards into the keys if the lid wasn't on it, and then you're just absolutely flying through the Sultan's garage in a sandpit full of keys until you smash into a Suzetta Moroder V16T or something. The whole thing has got disaster written all over it.
Have you ever seen a Suzetta V16T?
No.
So you haven't been in one?
I haven't, and for ages, it was sort of a standing joke with a former editor of Evo, and he was determined that he was going to get me into one, because I'd always said it's like my sort of unicorn car.
Oh, yeah.
And then we found one for sale, but it was in New Zealand, and he couldn't quite rustle up the budget to fly me to New Zealand just to drive this Suzetta. Still, I would love to. I just think...
Did it bankrupt Giorgio Moroder? Because
I don't think so.
He must have spent an enormous amount of dollar on that thing. Must have done.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how much money he put in. He might not have. I don't think he sort of staked his fortune on it. I think he sort of went, yeah, I'll give you a bit of money. But it didn't. You know, I don't think it ruined him. I'm not sure.
I bloody hope not. I feel bad if it. If it has.
I mean, I bet he gets checks for all that sort of Donna Summer stuff, doesn't he?
Well, it's one of the best, isn't it? It's one of the best. Mm. I went for a bit of a walk the other day with my. It was the day before going up to Manchester for the Manchester show.
Mm.
And went for a bit. I took my brother to Norfolk, which was against his will somewhat. He was really interested in going for a walk and looking at vintage car parts buried in the ground, but he's not that happy about going to Norfolk. I think like my brother's a bit like Mr. T, B.A. Baracus from the A-Team, you know, who was terrified of planes. My brother's very suspicious about Norfolk, and and he
lives quite near it, doesn't he?
Relatively. No, not really. I mean, from Norwich, 100 miles from Norwich.
What is it?
Yeah, it's still a long way, and there's no motorways there, is there? You got stuck behind a carrot lorry. But
where's your brother? I thought he was near you.
Yeah, he's near me. It's 100 miles to Norwich.
Okay, but Norwich is quite inside.
It is inboard. It's quite inboard.
Norfolk begins quite far west of Norwich.
Yeah, the Fens. We're quite close to the Fens, which is a cause for concern when you stop and think about it for too long. But yeah, we had Halloween quite recently, and I didn't bring it up on the podcast because I don't really understand it. But
no,
I always say that the thing about the Fens is, if you had one of those houses in the middle of nowhere and there was an axe murderer coming towards you on foot, you'd have enough time. You just keep looking out the window going, yeah, he's getting a bit closer. You might want to get your coat on. Have you got the car keys? Yeah, I've got the car keys. Can you just put the lights on the sort of timer to make sure it looks like we're in when
actually,
we're
not? Actually, hang on. I'm just going to set... I wanted to record Emmerdale, so I'm just
if you can
do
just
that.
Do that, set yeah. Oh, in fact, I tell you what, I'm going to take a flask. I'm just going to put the put the kettle on. Meanwhile, Axe Murderer is still walking in a completely straight line towards you through a cabbage field. You go, oh yeah, he's sharpening his axe.
He is quite close now. Let's get our shoes on.
Yeah.
Just get everything.
And there's a load of zombie dancers behind him now with sort of Michael Jackson looking jackets on. Yeah.
Funny enough, you mentioned Halloween. Every Halloween, I think about something that we saw when we were filming out on the Fens around this time of year. And there was a sign that just said pumpkins with no second P in it.
P-U-N.
Yeah. Do you not remember this? It just said pumpkins. And I, we took our kids to a pumpkin patch before Halloween and all. I was just wandering around going, pumpkins.
It's an aggressive statement, isn't it?
Well, it is. It was because also it was daubed. It was daubed on a bit of wood and in that sort of accepted Country Lane sign style. So
I do like that.
Have we talked about this on the podcast or just
what badly drawn
about
signs?
That's a whole fertile ground. Yes. No, I was going to say about I'm fascinated by that. You'll be driving across those very flat bits of the Fens, and they'll just be standing all out on its own. A pair of houses, like semi-detached.
Oh yes, we did talk about
nothing
when
else
we were
around
driving.
Them, and you just go.
We were driving
what
my
if you
Dodge.
Hate your neighbours. That is a horrible thing to happen.
You're sharing
if your
a wall,
are twats or they're noisy. Yeah,
you're sharing a
you've
wall.
Got no
when
one else
like,
around,
and you didn't have to. Like my brother said, no one's going to check for planning permission. Just like modify the house, no one's going to go. Oh,
put an air gap at least between the two.
Yeah,
it's weird, isn't it? And it's also, I mean, yeah, I don't understand it. I just don't understand why would you build a semi and then but then not build any other houses around it, but you just decided you need two houses there and they're attached to each other and then there's just seemingly infinite space around it. It's odd. But then it's a strange and spooky part of the world, I find. That Lincolnshire bit of the Fens, not far from you.
Yeah.
So flat. It's too flat.
It is a bit. No, I'll give you that. It is a bit spooky in place. This is as flat as I'd want it to be.
I don't think you could get any flatter. I mean, it's just flat.
No, very, very dark soil, though. So if you ever stop for a piss vista, stop it on some farmland and definitely admire the soil. I don't mean admire poos in the same lay-by that you've stopped in that people may or may not. Or my brother said, my brother saw a bottle with some quite dark yellow liquid in it. He went, look at that, bit of roadside Rioja. And I went, oh, God.
Man. Do you know, changing the subject completely, I was just...
Please.
There's something else I wanted to bring up with you for a couple of weeks.
Yes.
Do you know what a dry riser is?
A dry riser?
You see it, you know, you see that outside buildings, there'll just be a cover with dry riser written on it. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because a couple of weeks ago or so, I was passed as I walked down the street by a van that said dry riser testing unit on the side of it. And I was so intrigued. So I went, dry riser, I know that. Then you realise, I see it all the time. And I had to go home and look up what a dry riser is.
So is
it, I suddenly realised I have no idea.
Is it to do with... water or gas? Is it through the water main or
well, it's an empty pipe. It's a sort of a pipe system that's not part of your water. You know, your water that comes out of your taps.
Yeah.
It's for the fire brigade to plug into, I guess, and then it brings water into the building.
Oh, you can just basically hose water in.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
So I guess that's why it's called dry riser, because it's normally not full of water unless something's gone wrong. And I guess because it rises up the building. I didn't get this far. But,
no, I don't.
But yeah, I'm 46 and I've spent my whole life seeing the words dry riser around the place and I never knew what they were until I saw a van with it written on and then I had to go in. So I'm guessing the van testing unit is going around and just running a cheeky bit of water through your dry riser to make sure it's not leaking.
Or air. Or one of those little cameras to check how many mouse nests there are.
Oh, yes.
Or if there's County Line's drug running going on and they use old woman down the road's dry riser to stash the bag of naughty powder in there, and then the other bloke comes along and picks it up a day later. You never know with these things, do you?
Well, you don't. I don't think an old woman would have a dry riser, though. They don't. Houses don't seem to have them. It's more like, you know, office buildings and stuff, I think.
Maybe it's an old woman that lives in an office building. She just inherited it.
what a children's story that was. There was an old woman who lived in an office building. And when everyone else had gone home, she would do lots of photocopying because she could.
There's something quite magical and kind of naughty but exciting about staying in an office, a posh office, after hours, and then having the opportunity to sleep or go. I know we talked about this, I think, the other day when I was talking about me. Did I talk about me getting made redundant? Oh, yeah. No, it wasn't on the podcast, was it? It was.
No, this is in real life.
This is in real life. I just realised it's a story I probably can't mention on here. But anyway, there was something.
Yeah.
Something
I probably
quite,
wouldn't tell that story.
No, I'm not going to. Don't worry, Rich.
People can use their imagination. If you say someone was made redundant but found out they still had access to their old office,
yeah,
you can use your imagination.
But definitely no stealing, really.
No,
really.
Harmless prankery.
Harmless
I would
say. Prankery is a great, but, great
but
way
still
to.
Still, best not to. Talk yeah, about yeah, it in yeah, public, yeah. Just
of
in case.
Of course, of course. But yeah, the. There's something quite kind of, I don't know, interesting about it. I'm sure
it's ever slept in an office. Have you ever slept in an office?
Yeah, I slept under my own desk once. Yeah, I did. I got
just
a couple of, you know, there's those sofas that you get in offices that are dotted around and they're never used. You could use them at any point, but nobody ever does.
Yeah.
And they're quite high quality. I found one of those and I took the pillows off it and put them under my desk and I rolled under my desk and actually just slept. I took a glass of water with me and I took my shoes off and I fell asleep for about 4 hours. This was not during the day when the office was open, obviously, because that was just plain weird. This was at night. I'd stayed up till, I was there till very late anyway. It was like, I don't know, 3 a.m. I thought, oh, I got to be coming in soon. So I just had a little... I had a little snooze because it was warm in there. It was warm.
Were you on your own at this point?
I was on my own. Yeah, I was on my own.
So this wasn't on deadline or something for a magazine? This was just...
Yeah, well, I've pulled a few all-nighters at the office, which goes from being just dreadful to being quite euphoric.
I used to love that. When I was sub-editing for Evo, I would go up there and work in the office on deadline week. And on deadline night, when everything had to be finished... We would usually work late, and at some point, someone would go out and get us some bad food. You know, go and get a McDonald's or a pizza or something for everyone. And then we'd sort of, you know, push on through until it was done. And there's something, and because everybody's there and everyone's sort of, you know, pulling in the same direction, and it was just I used to love it. Because, you know, it's hard work, and it was quite. I'd drive back to London quite knackered listening to John Peel on the radio, but it was good.
It was
a good spirit to that. Yeah, well, that's it, because you could go, that's it, we did it, we made another magazine, that's quite good, that, and it's gone off to the printers, or it'll be going in the morning, whatever used to happen, and it was, it's quite satisfying. But so when you were in the office and you ended up sleeping there, was that really just because of your well-known ability to accidentally stay up really late and then realise it's really late?
I was actually, it was a deadline, but I was just too tired to push through, I think. I have pushed through, like I said. I've done a few all-nighters in offices. And it's weird because you see the sun go down and then the security guard comes in once an hour to check that you're not a criminal. And then the sun rises again. You go, bloody hell, I've been sat in the same office chair. That's just weird.
Yeah.
But something quite... I'm sure the listeners can relate. Some listeners can relate to this.
Also, I imagine as the security guard comes in every time, he could probably mentally chart the degrading smell of the office.
Oh, yeah. I never used to bring deodorant to... Oh, I did, actually. When I cycled to work, I used to bring deodorant because I'd have a bit of a Glasgow wash when I arrived. But because we didn't have a full shower. So I used to stand around before anyone turned up and let the sweat dry. And then I'd mask it with deodorant. Which is your classic, classic working man come back from work, wants to go out on the town with the lads, hasn't had time to properly bathe, so you just have a cheeky little, you know, deodorant wash.
Yeah, and there's a sort of dental cousin of that, which is when you can't be arsed or you have no facility to brush your teeth, you just do a quick squiz of mouthwash.
Oh, absolutely.
That seems to suffice.
Yeah, just pressure.
Freshening it up.
That's right. Yeah, it's just a quick jet wash.
God, sorry. So speaking of which, first of all, I need to go and have a shower, but also I was out last night, which is why my voice is a bit... because I went out and had a bit of a boozy dinner.
I can tell you've got a bit of gravel going on there. You sound like Cold Idol on E46 M3 BMW. It's very sort of a tinniness.
I think my Vanos might need some attention.
Oh, your Vanos is shagged.
Something's playing up, yeah.
Isn't Vanos in Marvel?
Yeah,
Marvel,
he's the one who wants to kill everyone, isn't he? Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah, kill everyone, but with, you know, variable...
Well, he's unpredictable. You never know when he's going to strike. You don't know about his timing.
So, we should probably bring this one into land. But before we go, we've got three things to tell you. They are, firstly, that Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called The Late Break Show. You probably know that by now. What you might not know is that he's got a video up there, which is him and his brother going to Norfolk. A bit of archaeology. I haven't watched that yet, which is why I can't tell you any details about it. I am going to watch. In fact, I'll go and watch it today.
I trip over a Trump Herald. Yeah.
I saw the clip you put on the socials last week where you disturbed a bird and shat yourself.
Oh gosh, I did. It was so. I think it was a nest, and you know when you're trying to do everything quietly,
yeah,
and it just it absolutely terrified me. I've had a badger charge at me from the back of a Morris Minor van before.
Oh, stocky bastards!
Yes, yeah.
My brother's been charged by a badger. He said it was quite frightening.
It is.
So, second thing I've got to do is I've got a new book out. It's called Boring Car Trivia 3. It's available from Amazon as a paperback or an ebook, or you can buy the paperback through the Late Break Show / Smith & Sniff merch shop. Go to thelatebreakshow.com and look for the merch tab, and you'll find it all there. Multi-plugging there. That was many things in one go.
That's really good. And there's other Smith & Sniff merch available too.
Yeah,
so feel free to browse.
T-shirts and mugs and all sorts. Yeah, braise away. And maybe even buy something. That'd be nice. And the third thing I've got to say is a follow-up from last week when I said the Statue of Liberty is not as tall as the clock tower on the Houses of Parliament. A chap called Richard Major on social media, he's a long-time listener, hello Richard, sent a follow-up fact, which is that the special effects artists who are working on Cloverfield, remember the film Cloverfield from 2008?
Yes.
There's a scene in that where the Statue of Liberty's head gets blown off and crashes into the street, and it's all done with computer-generated visual effects. And when they first did it, they did the head to the correct size, and test audiences said that head looks ridiculously small in the scale of a street with people around it. So for the final film, they made it 50% bigger than the real thing.
50%?
50% bigger, so that it looked more impressive, because otherwise it was just... The real Statue of Liberty's head is, in fact, pathetically small.
I bet they did that as well for Ghostbusters 2 when they brought Statue of Liberty to life and rode around in it like it was some sort of deranged Uber. Yeah, and that was fantastic. They hosed the inside of it with ectospunk, didn't they? And then it came out. They play music.
I think... Maybe that's one of the reasons why we perceive the Statue of Liberty to be bigger than it is.
Yeah.
Because of Ghostbusters 2.
I think it is because of the slime under the building. Yeah. That's what it's all about.
The documentary Ghostbusters 2. Good. Well, thank you very much for listening to this and tolerating a very croaky man. I've gone a bit Damon Albarn.
A big thanks to our... Yeah, you did sound quite Albarn. Big thank you to all of our Patreon subscribers. If you support this through the Patreon, it's very kind. And we do provide some additional materials there, but not graphic novels from Craig Charles's minicamp.
But we do put up some extra links.
Links.
Just going to go to Marley and
sweets
record
and treats.
Indigenous musicians.
Yes. And obviously, to say thank you to all our patrons at Christmas time, we'll see you all at a Wetherspoons at 11:15 for dinner. Okay.
What, 11:15 in the morning.
11:15 in the morning. I'll pass around a couple of pints of Foster's, and we'll all have egg and chips. All right. So thanks.
Making me hungry.
Yeah.
All right then. Well, that's that for this. But we will do it all again next week. Until then, goodbye.
Bye bye.
Grammy Award winning artist Seema Lyles. Just do the notes, pick one and stick with
it. Yeah, you fluttery wench, what are you doing?